Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hello, and welcome to Who Will Save Generation X, the trivia game show that is dedicated to remembering, celebrating, and preserving all the wonderful qualities of Generation X through games, trivia, and friends. I am Zabe, the host of the show, and I am very excited to be back with this special Halloween edition of the Challenging Stage format of the show. I hope you're enjoying our spooky remix of our theme song for this special occasion. This format of Who Will Save Generation X is a shorter version of the podcast that we can release in between regular episodes of the show and the home games, where it's just the listeners versus the podcast to see how many points you can get. No prizes or ranks, just a quick minigame to satisfy that nostalgic itch for the Halloween pop culture of Generation X. Here's how the game works. We will have three fast-paced rounds of games to play and score points. In round three, we have a special guest host take over the show and quiz me for five questions. If you can get more questions correct than I can, then you are invited to use our special website answering machine system and mock me endlessly.
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
I guess thanks for that example, judges. Let me assure you that our Gen X crowd knows how to insult people without your help. Thanks.
Anyway, you could also use that answering machine to call in and take over as host for a moment and ask me five trivia questions that we can use on an upcoming episode. Just go to our website at whowillsavegenx.com and click on that blue microphone icon on the lower right part of your screen and leave us five trivia questions on any Gen X pop culture topics you'd like. It's 100% free to use, and it can be accessed by any device that has an internet connection and a microphone. We would love to hear your voice on the show. So let's get going and save the spooky side of Generation X from being forgotten in this episode of The Challenging Stage.
Round one.
Round one is a game called
In a World Coming Soon.
In this game, I will play selected parts of a movie trailer from a Gen X movie, and you need to tell me which movie it was a preview for. There are clips from three movies, and you'll get 2 points for each movie you can name without the hint. However, if you need the hint, you'll be awarded 1 point for each that you can name correctly. Here's movie one for 2 points, if you can name it correctly right now.
Billy has a nice home.
Billy, is that you?
Yeah, Mom, it's me.
A nice job, a nice girl, and loving parents. Who were about to give him...
You're gonna like this. No, don't shake it. We're gonna have to open it now. It won't wait till Christmas.
The most unusual gift he ever got.
What is it?
No.
It's your new pet.
I feel like this one's pretty easy, so I'll make these hints super vague and unhelpful. You're welcome. I mean, this is a Halloween episode, so it feels right to get some tricks with your treats. Remember, if you get the answer correct with assistance from the hints, then it's only worth 1 point. The hints are that there are some that would classify this as a Christmas movie and not a Halloween movie. But the fact that it was released in June of 1984 might cause both thoughts to be incorrect. The movie stars Corey Feldman, Judge Reinhold, but the main character features Howie Mandel. Worst hints ever, right? Well, ready or not, it's time for the reveal. Judges?
No matter how much they beg, never let them eat after midnight. Because when they do, they change. Steven Spielberg presents Gremlins.
What's going on here?
Gremlins was heavily criticized by the old crusty adults at the time who thought the movie was way too violent, scary, and inappropriate for its PG rating. Seeing how it legit disturbed my older brother when we went and saw it in the theaters, they might have a point. It really got to him in a bad way. Criticism of the film being advertised as a movie featuring cute, cuddly mogwais that turned into sadistic monsters that ended up getting cooked alive in a microwave felt like a bait and switch to some movie critics. Renowned film critic Leonard Maltin disapproved of the film, calling it icky and gross. Maltin later made a cameo appearance in the sequel Gremlins 2, repeating his criticisms of the original film as an in-joke before being throttled by the creatures. He later gave the second film a more positive rating, 3 out of 4 stars. Interesting. However, the critique that has aged most poorly came from some random writer named John Nubbin, who stated that, "All in all, it is just another exploitation film, trading on Spielberg's name and reputation. It is merely a moneymaker, just another summer film, which in the end has nothing to keep it in our memories past Thanksgiving." End quote. Look, Gremlins has a sequel, a prequel, tons of merch, helped to add the PG-13 option for the Motion Picture Association of America, referenced throughout pop culture consistently since its release, spawned countless non-related inferior movie wannabe Gremlin films, I'm looking at you, Ghoulies, and has a freaking private museum dedicated to it. Not memorable past Thanksgiving, my ass. How does it feel to be wrong, John Nubbin? Because Gremlins is also remembered on this random obscure Gen X culture podcast over 40 years later. Suck it. Turns out it is you who won't be remembered past Thanksgiving, Johnny.
Who is Johnny?
Okay, now on to movie 2. Here's the trailer for 2 points.
Everyone has a birthday they'll always remember.
Can we open my presents now, Mommy?
He's something, isn't he?
This is Andy's. Everyone knows most accidents happen at home.
How did that happen?
This is no accident.
Andy?
I'm Detective Mike Norris, homicide.
Andy!
Miss Peterson's dead, Barkley. She fell from the kitchen window.
Someone's moved in with the Barkley family. And so has terror.
Mommy, I know who was on the counter.
Andy!
Who, Andy?
My hand, I...
Oh, for God's sake.
Why won't you believe?
Because I'm sane, Mrs. Barkley, sane and rational.
No one believes the truth. Or lives to tell it.
And now your 1 point hint. This is a movie from 1988, and if you're using a person's name to answer this one, then you got it wrong. There are no names in the title of this movie. Do you have your answer ready? Here's the reveal.
There's nothing nice about murder. And there's nothing innocent about child's play.
The film almost arrived under a very different name. During development, the working title was Batteries Not Included, until it turned out that another film was being used with the same title. And Spielberg always gets his way. After that, the title morphed into Blood Buddy, before finally becoming the correct answer of Child's Play. So if you said some form of Chucky in the answer, then you got this one incorrect. Sorry. The creepy villain doll's full name is Charles Lee Ray, aka Chucky. The name was derived from real-life infamous names Charles Manson plus Lee Harvey Oswald plus James Earl Ray. So yes, the makers didn't exactly go lightly on the evil toy branding. Despite the endearing packaging of the good guy's doll, the film's writer Don Mancini originally intended a much darker satire of toy culture and aggressive advertising. He was inspired by how parents fought over Cabbage Patch Kids in the 80s and envisioned a prototype script where the doll would literally bleed when mistreated by his owner. This got much further into development than it should have until a merchandising executive pointed out that parents would not buy dolls that bleed as merch in 1988. However, here in the distant future of 2025, I think there might be a market for a Blood Buddy doll. Judges, we made you happy by ham-fisting that Who's Johnny sound drop in the last question, but it makes no sense for this one. Be happy you got one Who's Johnny in on this episode, and stop getting greedy. And the last movie for In a World Coming Soon is worth 2 points if you get it right here.
You know who to call when you have ghosts. But who do you call when you have monsters? They're young and inexperienced. They're a bit disorganized. But when strange things start happening in town...
There's a monster in my closet.
They're the only ones ready to do battle. By midnight...
You guys!
They won't seem so young anymore.
Get him in the door! Get him in the door! Go in!
Here's your 1 point hint if you need it. Movie 3 is from 1987, and IMDb calls this a vampire monster comedy horror film. Your final hint is, well, if the phrase Wolfman's got nards doesn't ring a bell, then there is no hint I can possibly give you that will help you on this one. Okay, let's reveal the correct answer now.
The Monster Squad.
Wolfman's got nards!
For a movie about kid monster mashups, the creature and makeup team got serious. The legendary Sam Winston Studio did the monster effects for this one. The folks who gave us big-budget creature features in Aliens, Predator, and The Thing were also building The Mummy, The Gill Man, and of course, The Wolfman's Nards for this kid's adventure flick. The scream you hear when Dracula lifts up little Phoebe off the platform? Actress Ashley Bank, aged 5 at the time, was genuinely freaked out by Dracula in full monster makeup, contacts, and fangs. The director just gave her the advice of, you'll know when to scream. Her terrified shriek made its way into the film and possibly made her way into therapy later in life. Seems like directors in the 80s thought that trauma makes the best acting coaches.
Give me the amulet, you bitch!
Yikes, Dracula. She's only 5. Jeez.
Okay, let's move on to round 2. Round 2 this episode is our Spotlight Trivia Round. We will dive into one Gen X topic to quiz you on. Each complete correct answer is worth 2 points if you know the answer outright, but if you need the hint or multiple choice, then it is worth only 1 point. I'll ask the questions and then circle back with the answers at the end of the round. Good luck! The Spotlight topic for this episode demands that you grab your popcorn, clutch your blanket, and maybe check that the boiler room is empty, because we're heading straight back into 1984, when big hair was in, shoulder pads ruled, and Freddy Krueger was everyone's new sleep deprivation plan. A Nightmare on Elm Street wasn't just another slasher flick. It was the moment that horror took a power nap and woke up screaming. With a fedora, a Christmas sweater from hell, and a manicure that could slice deli meat, Freddy became the ultimate dream crasher for every teenager who ever thought that study hall was scary. Directed by horror maestro Wes Craven and starring a baby-faced Johnny Depp in his film debut that features 100 gallons of fake blood in a blender scene you'll never forget, and you've got some horror movie royalty. This movie turned nightmares into must-see cinema and made caffeine an acceptable teenage survival tool. So tuck yourself in, keep one eye open, and for the love of all things holy,
whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is A Nightmare on Elm Street. Let's start off with something pretty easy.
Question number 1.
As we all know, Freddy Krueger likes to kill kids on Elm Street in their dreams. The movie centers mostly around 4 of these kids, but which one did Freddy kill first? If you can give me the first name of this character that gets the first taste of Freddy's glove, then it'll be worth 2 points to you. But if you need the multiple choice, then it will be worth only 1 point. Is the correct answer A, Tina? B, Glenn? C, Nancy? D, T-Bone? Or is it E, Cousin Oliver?
Question number 2.
Rod, an aptly named character in this film, is blamed for the murder of Freddy's first victim and is sent to jail where he becomes Freddy's next victim. Your question is, how does Rod die? If you know how Rod died alone in his jail cell, then it'll be worth 2 points to you right now. But here's the multiple choice options for 1 point. Did Rod die from A, hanged using bedsheets? B, skull squashed as it is squeezed between the jail cell bars? C, smothered with a pillow. D, good old reliable knife fingers from Freddy. Or is it E, Freddy had nothing to do with it, but it is later revealed that many high-powered government officials' names appeared on the flight logs to Rod's private sex island and Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Question number 3.
Freddy is often thought of as on the Mount Rushmore of slasher villains, and the body count on this movie might surprise people. Your question is, how many people die on screen in this movie? Freddy only kills main characters in this movie, and if you can remember how many get got in this flick, then it'll be worth 2 points to you right now. However, if you need the 1 point multiple choice options, here they are. Is it A, 2, B, 3, C, 4, D, 5, or is it E, 69?
69, dudes!
Question number 4.
Nancy takes to the offensive versus Freddy to try and end his reign of terror on Elm Street by reading a book about booby traps and making a plan to pull Freddy out of her dreams and into the real world to kill him all over again. Nancy gets all MacGyver on Freddy and makes a series of booby traps to plan on how to defeat the slasher. Which of the following is not one of Nancy's booby traps or attacks used against Freddy? A. Gunpowder inside a light bulb as a bomb. B. A rigged sledgehammer to swing at him when he opens the door. C. A simple tripwire. D. Glue on the stair steps. Or is it E. Nancy plans to simply ignore Freddy? If you know the answer right now, it's worth 2 points. But here is your 1 point hint. All of these tricks and traps appear somewhere in the movie, but the correct answer is the one that Freddy uses against Nancy.
And finally, question number 5.
The final question of the round is, Johnny Depp plays Glenn, the cute boy next door in this movie, who meets his gruesome end at the hands of Freddy in a scene that features about 100 gallons of fake blood. Your question is, what is Glenn doing right before he gets the Freddy Cusenark treatment and is slashed into 1,000,000,000 pieces? If you know the answer right now, it's worth 2 points. But for 1 point, here are your multiple choice options. Is it A, enjoying his TV on his lap for some reason? B, listening to his record player? C, wearing a crop top t-shirt? D, sleeping? Or is it E, all of these things all at once?
Two friends come for you. Three, four, better lock your door. Five, six, grab your crucifix. Seven, eight, gonna stay up late. Nine, ten.
Now that you had a little time to think about the questions, here are the answers. We asked you, who did Freddy kill first in the movie? If you answered option C, Nancy, then you probably have never seen this movie before and you got it wrong. The correct answer is option A, Tina, of course. In the fictional town of Springwood, Ohio, Tina gets slashed by Freddy's knife fingers and is smeared all over the walls and ceiling in a very memorable scene. The choice of Ohio as the location of this movie makes the viewer feel that if it could happen in Middle America, then it could happen anywhere. However, anyone with eyeballs can see that it was clearly filmed in California. The odds of all the cars in this Ohio town being out-of-state transfers, as their California license plates would indicate, are astronomical. But the biggest tell of all? It's the Washingtonia Robusta Mexican fan palms used in the landscaping. I mean, you can plant these palm trees in Ohio, but it would take extreme care to keep these alive long enough to grow 50 feet tall, as depicted in the movie. Furthermore, Mexican fan palms are hardy only in zones 9 through 11 and suffers frond damage when temperatures drop below as 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So, if you want me to believe that Ohio, which is mainly hardiness zone 6, where average minimum temperatures can be below freezing in winter, and, as everyone knows, Washingtonia Robusta can die when temperatures consistently drop below 12 to 15 degrees, that this movie could possibly be set in Ohio? Really? That's what you want me to believe? Wes Craven can fool me when it comes to a horribly disfigured man cosplaying as Indiana Jones in a dirty Christmas sweater who kills teens in their sleep. but not when it comes to the hardiness zone viability in landscape palms shown for a brief moment far off in the background that they chose for this setting. Wesley Craven might be the, quote, master of horror, but Wesley Craven is clearly not a master gardener.
Shut up, Wesley.
Question two asks, how does Rod die? While Rod was sleeping in his cell, the invisible hand of Freddy wrapped Rod's bedsheets around his neck and hanged him. Please recognize that I used the words hanged and not hung, because using the words hung Rod in the same sentence may make people think that this is no longer a family podcast.
I had a hard-on this morning when I woke up, Tina. Had your name written all over it.
There's four letters in my name, Rod. How could there be room on your joint for four letters?
Anyways, Rod may not have been guilty of killing Tina, but I'm positive that he was guilty of many other crimes. Dude was a creep, but while I don't think he should have been killed for his crimes, the priest officiating his funeral seems to disagree.
His life and his death attest the scripture's warning that he who lives by the sword shall die by the sword. But let us recall also our Lord's admonition that we judge not, lest we be judged.
Yeah, bro. It sure sounds like you're not judging him with the whole living by the sword bit. Dude's lucky there was no such thing as Yelp reviews back in the 80s. How many people die in this movie? While 20 unnamed children were killed by Freddy off-screen when he was alive, according to his backstory, only four were killed on-screen. So the correct answer is option C, four people die in this movie. In order, Freddy kills Tina Gray with the knife fingers, Rod Lane with the bedsheet, Glenn Lance with, I guess, a bed blender? Or I guess Johnny Depp and Freddy Krueger became blood buddies. And his final kill of and his final kill is that of the alcoholic mom, Marge Thompson, who he sucks through their tiny door window at the very end of the movie as the young girls skip rope singing the Freddy song. Which of the following is not one of Nancy's booby traps or attacks used against Freddy? Option D, glue on the stairs, is the correct answer. If glue on the stairs is familiar to you, it's because in the movie, Nancy tries to run from Freddy up the stairs, and he used his dream manipulation powers to turn her stairs into this kind of sticky glue white stuff. If you remember, each time she stepped into all the stairs, it broke away with each step, and her feet looked like they were stepping in a pool of melted marshmallows. This whole part of the movie is kind of silly, to be honest. She tells her dad to come wake her up in 20 minutes and catch Freddy as she pulls him out of her dreams. She then starts to build all of these elaborate booby traps in the house that is locked up with bars and on the windows. There is no way at all she would have enough time to build all these traps, go to sleep, grab Freddy, and present him for her dad to presumably shoot with all within 20 minutes. Especially figuring it is a house that they can't even get into without breaking down the door. It was a poor plan to say the least. The booby traps were totally unnecessary in this movie, and it makes it feel kind of slapstick at moments watching Freddy fall for all these traps and then flopping down the stairs or getting hit below the belt with a sledgehammer. When I watched this recently with my 13-year-old daughter, even she said,
"Are we watching a scary movie or are we watching Home Alone?"
Ultimately, Nancy uses her finishing move by turning her back on Freddy, ignoring him to, quote, take away his power. All that Kevin McAllister energy is for nothing when all she had to do was look the other way. However, speaking from experience, I can attest to the devastating power being ignored by teenage girls during the 80s can have. I feel your pain, Freddy.
What? I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy.
And finally, question 5 asks, what was Glenn doing right before he gets chopped up by Freddy? Well, clearly he was sleeping. That's the whole premise of the movie, guys. Freddy kills you when you sleep. However, he also had a TV on his lap, headphones plugged into his stereo, laying in bed with his crop top on. So I guess if you said any of these options at first, you're technically correct and can score yourself at least 1 point for the hint. The scene in question was both a movie-making achievement and a disaster at the same time. If you remember this scene, Glenn gets sucked down into his bed and then a fire hose of blood gushes upwards and paints the ceiling in a gravity-defying manner.
You don't need a stretcher up there. You need a mop.
They made the set so they could rotate it upside down to give the visual effect of blood flowing upwards. Sadly, the mechanism used for the effect malfunctioned during shooting, and the set actually flipped over, spilling hundreds of gallons of red syrupy goo all over the crew and shorting out their electrical equipment, nearly electrocuting them. Johnny Depp's bed getting coated with goo is one of the most memorable parts of the movie, but as time would later show us, not the most memorable thing to coat Johnny Depp's bed. Coming up in round three of the challenging stage is our guest host segment, but before we do that, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor.
Ghostbusters will return after these messages.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, have you ever thought about giving us a positive review on the podcast platform where you found us? Positive reviews really help the podcast grow and shows your appreciation for providing you with this entertainment. We put a lot of work into every episode we make, and it would be really great if you'd take a moment to give us a 5-star rating when you're done listening to this episode. I mean, heck, there's only one round left, so you could even do it right now if you really wanted to. It costs you nothing and would just take a few moments to leave a review, but it would really mean a lot to me. We look forward to reading what you think about the show. Thanks so much.
So who's going to save a generation? Are you going to save a generation? Who will save Generation X?
We now return to the real Ghostbusters.
Now that you're done leaving us a review, let's move on to round three.
Round three.
I'm the guy who normally asks the questions, but in this segment, we're going to turn things around and have one of our listeners ask the questions to see if I can do my part to save Generation X. Our special guest host this episode is none other than producer, trivia writer, fact checker, scorekeeper, and personal friend. You know her. You love her. Please welcome to the special guest host chair this episode, Robin. Thanks for being on the show, Robin.
Hey, Zabe. I'm excited to be here. It's fun to be on this side.
Yeah, be gentle.
I'll do my best. All right, my first question for you is, we all know that Danny Elfman did the singing for Jack Skellington in The Nightmare Before Christmas, but which actor, famous for his role in The Princess Bride, did the talking voice for Jack? Your choices are A, Chris Sarandon, B, Mandy Patinkin, C, Carrie Elwes, or D, Christopher Guest. And I can tell you who each of these people played in Princess Bride, if that would help.
Who was A again?
Chris Sarandon.
And he played whom in Princess Bride?
Prince Humperdinck.
I believe that's it. I'm going with A, am I right?
You're totally right.
Word.
This is my fun fact. I only just recently learned that the voices of Lock, Shock, and Barrel are voiced by Paul Rubens, Catherine O'Hara, and Danny Elfman, respectively.
Yeah, I knew that one. You can totally hear Pee-wee's voice shine
you
through.
You totally
that one.
Can, yeah. And Catherine's. I just didn't hear it the first time. And then I came across a video where I guess they were performing it at the Hollywood Bowl, and all three of them did the, yeah, you know, the Santa Claus song they do. Anyway,
my sister was there, and I was super jealous of her.
No way.
Yeah, and She's not even a fan, which was, makes it even worse. Like, she went, somebody she knew had an extra ticket, and she's like, oh, I don't really want to go, but I will. And later she told me about it. She said, oh, it's so amazing. It's too bad you couldn't go. I'm like, yeah, it is too bad.
It's really too bad.
Thanks for letting me know that it's too bad that I couldn't go to that rad show. Appreciate that.
Thanks for the heads up, sis. All right. My second question for you is, in the first ever Treehouse of Horror, Bart tells the story of the Simpsons family moving into a cursed mansion, then a story about an alien abduction, before Lisa closes out the episode with a retelling of what spooky classic?
Oof.
I'm going to give you multiple choice on this one.
I know the first two. Like, I know those, yeah, two sketches really well. The last one, nothing pops my mind instantly, but I'll take the multiple choice.
We have A, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, B, Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven, C, Bram Stoker's Dracula, or D, Henry James, The Turn of the Screw.
It's something so stupid to say. I don't even want to say it.
Tell me.
My English teacher always told me, never mind, it's too stupid. I can't even do it. If you don't know, you go with Poe, is what my English teacher always taught me. So I'm going to go with Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes. That is correct. Thank your English teacher. Everyone, right. Thank your English teachers.
Thank you, Mr. Emery.
Do you have a favorite Treehouse of Horror? That's one that always stuck out to me. I don't know why.
The one I enjoyed is the Kang and Kodos one where they're both running for president. And yeah. It's a two-party system. You have to vote for one of us. Well, I think I'll vote third party. Go ahead. Throw your vote away.
Oh, man, I love that show. That was one that I grew up on. Okay, third question. In Beetlejuice, deceased couple Barbara and Adam, while navigating the complex bureaucracy that is the afterlife, learn that they must remain ghosts haunting their former home for how many years? This one is also multiple choice, if you'd like.
I'm never going to turn down a multiple choice. I think I know awesome, it, but perfect. Go ahead.
You can do A, 500 years. B, 250 years. C, 125 years. Or D, 69 years.
69, dudes!
Yeah, nice.
I'm going to say 125 years.
Yeah, see? Oh,
nice.
Great job.
Anything more than 125 years seems excessive to me.
I agree. And it can't be 69. We know this.
Yeah.
I think you've got 3 for 3 so far, yeah?
I do, surprisingly.
Well done.
Is that 2 points apiece? Do I have 6 points?
6 points.
All right, word.
Okay, question 4. In E.T., Steven Spielberg's iconic alien is a big fan of Reese's Pieces. But what candy did Spielberg initially plan to use in the movie?
The only analog candy that we could possibly think of has to be M&M's, right?
Yeah, you're right. And after, because he wanted to use M&M's, but the company said, nah, don't. So he replaced him with Reese's Pieces. The movie, of course, was a massive success. And I read that sales for Reese's Pieces jumped 85% in the weeks after the movie came out.
I wonder if Reese's Pieces would even exist today without the support of that movie.
I wanted to say that it like made Reese's Pieces a popular candy, but I wasn't 100% sure if that was true.
I'm sure of it. I don't remember it before E.T., but you know, I was 9 at the time, so sure. My history with candy wasn't quite that extensive at that point.
Sure. Oh, that was like the first thing my mom told me after we saw E.T. She loves that fact. Of course, I saw it, you know, years after it came out. I'm a millennial. Not everyone knew that.
Don't out yourself, Robin.
I know. I'm always talking about it. All right. Question 5. In the original cartoon series Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Which of the Mystery Inc. gang owned and drove the Mystery Machine?
Who drove the Mystery Machine?
Owned and drove it.
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a pink slip with Fred's name on it, but I know he's driving it all the time. So if one goes with the other, I got to say Fred.
You're right. It was Fred. I don't know at what point they made that canon, but everywhere that I looked said that he owned it in the original series too. And I was like, fair enough.
Well, come on. It's the 70s and
women and stoners can't drive.
Women weren't allowed to own anything back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, Fred saving Shaggy a DUI by getting behind the wheel. So I think that's fair. Process of elimination. Bingo.
I did include in the multiple choice, which you didn't need, Scrappy-Doo. Now, the last time Scrappy-Doo was brought up on the show, I'll say, I feel like you went off on this little puppy. Is he hated?
Yeah, I think I do remember having a special sound drop on that episode just for Scrappy. The only reason I gave Scrappy-Doo any shade whatsoever is because it's well earned. Scrappy was he's the cousin Oliver of that show. He's like, hey, let's bring some cute little guy in to try and revive the show. You know, it's desperate attempts to re-energize a franchise when they bring in the kid character onto the show.
Oh, yeah. The precocious kid character.
Yes. I mean, there's just, is that or Ted McGinley? You know, the show is jump the shark when you see either Ted or a small version of someone else in the show.
Oh, man. Well, did you, I don't know, I assume you know this. When I was a kid, of course I had seen Scooby-Doo, but they did the live action movie right around the time I was just the appropriate age for it. I'm not saying it's good or anything, but do you remember that Scrappy ends up being the villain in that?
Does he? I don't know.
Yeah, it was like a big reveal. It was crazy. Anyway, I was like, wow, maybe that was because people were annoyed with him.
I don't think they made that movie for me. If it's no, starring it was Scrappy made. Doo,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it was for made for my generation for sure. Yeah. Oh man, well that's 5 for 5, Zabe. Woo-hoo! Easy on you.
I mean, I don't know if those were easy, but
no, you know. No. So I mean, honestly, the Poe Edgar Allan Poe one that came in clutch. I loved that.
Nice. Yeah, I think the Eminem one was kind of easy.
Yeah.
But everything's fair game. Hey, we didn't set this up ahead of time. You picked whatever you picked. I'm glad I went 5 for 5. I'm not complaining at all.
Oh, yeah. No, pat yourself on the back for sure.
Word. Hey, Robin, do you have anything you'd like to plug or promote here on the episode?
Yeah, it's something I've mentioned before on the show, but my brother Daniel, who is the forever DM of our family when we play D&D, he has his own system that's kind of a spinoff of version 3.5, and it's a lot of fun. It's very modern. It takes out some of the like race elements, but still keeps like the fun parts of the game that come with that, like the specialty skills, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's really fun. He's a great DM. He's a great gamer. And if you're interested in D&D at all, you should check it out at danthedm.com.
I'm going to put on my nerd hat for a second and just say that version 3.5 of Dungeons & Dragons has a ton of mechanics to it. So if you found a way to simplify it a little bit, but still keep the coolness of that version, then hats off to him. And it's definitely worth checking out.
Awesome. Thanks, Abe.
Thank you, Robin, for guest hosting this episode.
Lead on, adventurer. Your quest awaits.
If you would like to try your hand at guest hosting this segment and share your trivia knowledge of the fun things of Generation X, just like Robin did here today, then send the judges an email at whowillsavegenx@gmail.com. Or even better, go to our website at whowillsavegenx.com and leave us a message. Just tap on that blue microphone icon on the lower right part of your screen to leave us a message. It's free to use, and your voice might be used on an upcoming episode of the show. We set this up so we can get you asking us some Gen X pop culture trivia questions for the show, but really, anything you have on your mind about the show, our generation, or whatever you want to share with us is fair game on the answer machine. We're hoping that you'll just reach out and say hi.
Reach out and touch someone.
Well, that's it for this special Halloween episode of The Challenging Stage. We hope you enjoyed it, and it adds a little extra fun for you and your family this Halloween. If you know someone that you think might enjoy listening to a Halloween Gen X Trivia Game Show podcast, then we welcome you to share this episode with that special Gen Xer in your life and subscribe to the show for future episodes where we will once again ask the question, who will save Generation X? Later. As a special treat for this Halloween episode, the judges have prepared a special out-of-context theater made up completely of the sound drops that they provided in this episode. They're calling it the entire episode in under a minute. We'll see how this turns out. From all of your friends here at Who'll Save Gen X, we wish you all a very happy Halloween.
You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
Who is Johnny?
Give me the amulet, you bitch!
Oh, for God's sake.
5, 6, grab your crucifix.
Wolfman's gone mad.
Shut up, Wesley.
That we judge not, lest we be judged.
69, dudes!
I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy.
Happy power!
You don't need a stretcher up there. You need a mop.
Don't fall asleep.
I had a hard on this morning when I woke up, Tina.
No, don't shake it.
Are we watching a scary movie or are we watching Home Alone?
This isn't just a game, it's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100 year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.